Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions. This episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Become a patron today at patreon.com/intotheportal.
Hello, and welcome back into the portal. I'm Amber A.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
And we've got something special for you guys today.
Yeah, we do. Something we've never done before.
Nope.
And it all has to do with an upcoming anniversary we have. Mm-hmm. But basically, we are taking a look at our top 10 episodes from the past year, all because of you guys and all of your patronage and listenership. And we're going to do some trivia.
Yeah, top 10 trivia. Woo!
So we're going to test not only our own knowledge of things we've researched, but we also want to kind of test your guys' knowledge too.
Yeah.
So we were hoping that maybe you guys would want to follow along with this little trivia game show thing we're going to have going on here on Into the Portal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep your tally and send us a little picture of yourself doing it or video or whatever the hell you want to do, we'll hook you up with some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're very curious to see if you guys actually remember more than we do when it comes to our episodes. Being well over 100 episodes now, it's actually pretty hilarious when we started writing some of this stuff where we were like, yeah, I can't remember some of this. I can't remember what happened in Baikal. I can't remember what happened here or there or wherever.
Like when you were doing the questions, you mean?
When I was just looking over episodes, I was like, what happened to Cambyses again?
Because just so everyone is clear on this, we are going to be doing one episode per person. So I'm questioning.
Yes.
You're in the interrogation room.
I feel like I am.
Into the portal's interrogation. So I'll be doing the 10th spot. Andrew will be doing the 9th spot. Mm-hmm. And every week we're just going to go up the list. So until we get to the top episode of the year,
yeah,
we're going to keep you guys guessing too. So follow along. And it is, I guess, What do you call it? We have no way of policing this, so it is
the honor system.
It
so
is
to speak.
The honor system. That's
it is indeed
the one that is kind of rare these days.
I mean, if someone really wanted to go back and listen from beginning to end episodes that we're doing trivia for and write their answers down, then you know what? That's due diligence, and we'll give you some stuff for that too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think honestly, I have a good feeling that people are going to remember a lot about our episodes. So I'm curious to see if you guys.
Well,
what the tally is on a questionnaire here.
I'm curious to know how much you remember.
Yeah, me too.
Or just to find out how much you remember. So we're going to start with round one, number 10 on the docket here. None other than the infamous story of Charlotte Brown abducted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So those of you who are unfamiliar with this subject, you can always go back and listen to our full episode. It's called Abducted, the Story of Charlotte Brown. And then you can listen along and try your hand at some trivia here. So Charlotte Brown, I guess my first question before we even get started is, do you remember this episode?
So
any impressions?
So I of course I remember the episode, and I remember definitely bits and pieces about Charlotte Brown and her original story. The thing is like, I need things to jog my memory. So I'm hoping that some of your questions will help with that, because I definitely don't, right off the top of my head, I'm not remembering the details of Charlotte's abduction, or abductions, if I'm correct. But let's, we'll see how I do here.
Yes. Okay. So before I go ahead and ask the first question, Just to jog everyone's memory a bit, this was actually a Canadian story. And the basis for most of the research was from an episode of CBC's Morning Star. And it was an interview with Charlotte Brown.
Right.
Also an alias, not her real name. And yeah, we just kind of unraveled the story from there. So, Charlotte Brown was a young woman when this initially took place. I'm not going to say her age, not going to give anything away. But I am going to ask you, Andrew, do you remember when her initial abduction took place? And bonus point for correct location.
Okay, so good question. So I do remember that she was quite young during this first encounter. I want to say that I want to say she was 9 years old and that it happened outside of school, on the way to school. And or, oh man, I think I'm misremembering that though. Mm-hmm. I'm almost remembering that it's nighttime in her bedroom. I'm going to say 9 years old and nighttime at her house.
I'm thinking year though. Do you remember the decade?
The decade.
And do you remember the location?
19.
Because I don't really care how old she is.
Right. Okay. 1977. I'm guessing.
A couple decades off there.
Oh my God. Are you serious? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's just scratch me off at zero for that first question.
Well, and location. Any stabs
yes.
at it
East
there?
Coast of Canada.
You have to get at least the province.
Yes. Nova Scotia.
On both accounts.
Pathetic.
Yeah, so you said 1977. The correct answer is 1947. And it's in Muskoka, Ontario. Yes, that was the initial abduction.
47?
You
were. Wow, same year as like Kenneth Arnold's stuff.
Very similar, yeah. Very close in the time frame there.
Interesting, okay.
You All were right. very, you're right about the, I don't know, the time of day, I guess. It was at night.
Okay, kind of, sort of.
All right, so
All right.
No bonus points and a big old X for question one. All right, question two. Charlotte had a very intimate encounter with beings that she discovered in a nearby field next to her home. What did the, quote, aliens do to Charlotte in that initial encounter? There's five things that she described in the episode that we kind of listed off. If you can get any one of the five or all five, you have a chance to get 5 points.
Okay.
So go back to that initial. It's in the farmhouse. It's late at night. Do you remember any of the specifics?
I'm really digging deep in my memory banks here.
I know. I had to too. I was like, damn, I don't remember this.
I think the tough thing about this for me is because it's an abduction case. And obviously we haven't covered a ton of UFO stuff, but mm-hmm. we've read a million UFO things and my brain has been flooded with UFO stuff right now. So.
All right. Well, give me your best guess.
Okay. So.
Anything at all.
The one thing I remember is that they communicate with her, I believe, telepathically. So there's no, like, they're not talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up on a table, but doesn't want to. Like, they convince her to go into the ship. They force her telepathically to go.
Hmm.
And then she ends up, I'm remembering something to do with an ironing board. Maybe that was just the shape of the table she ends up laying on. Mm-hmm. And then is examined on a table. So spoken to telepathically, examined on a table. That's all I got. I cannot remember the rest. I don't remember the questions she asked.
You kind of got 3 out of 5. They also actually took scrapings from her arm.
Okay.
And they also inserted a long needle-like probe at her navel. And all this was while she was forced telepathically against her will to cooperate.
Yikes.
All right, I'll give you a couple for that. You're not getting the full 5.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't give myself anywhere close to the full 5 on that.
All right, well, question 3 here. And we're just going to get harder and harder, just so you know.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so there was one other thing that the alien beings left with Charlotte. Something that remained inside of her for a number of years, only to be violently emitted one day.
Mm-hmm.
What was that object?
K, Okay, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like a small piece of metal. I remember she ended up keeping it in her bedside drawer for years and years, that her kids played with it or something like that, and then it ended up going missing. Mm-hmm. It was some sort of a tracking device. It was like a metal object. That's
my guess. A metal object. Okay, I'll give it to you. She's described as like a metal burr.
A burr, okay. Metal burr. Maybe yes, I got one. I legitimately got one. Yes.
Do you remember, sorry, did you say how she lost it?
Oh, she sneezed it out, I think.
Okay, yeah, bonus point.
Yes, awesome.
Okay, moving on to question four. Physicist/ufologist Stanton Friedman acknowledged that Charlotte's story closely paralleled many other abduction stories. Most obvious was the description of the alien beings. How did Charlotte describe them?
Automatically, my brain goes to one very specific type of extraterrestrial creature, and I'm remembering the grays. I'm remembering mm-hmm. skinny, gray, big eyes, big heads, mm-hmm. classic grays.
Anything particular in their stature or size?
For some reason, I want to say that they were actually smaller in Charlotte's account. Like, they were short rather than these tall, towering grays.
Exactly.
Okay, nice.
Yep, you got that one. Yes. So, less Slenderman-like, able to fit into a small craft.
Okay.
Yes. Fun fact here, actually, the most common of all sightings and abduction beings are the grays. According to a 1995 book revised in 2005, Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, around 43% of all reported alien encounters in the U.S. describe these alien grays.
And I'd just like to point out here, as a fun side note in this trivia episode, that fact is pretty strange and fascinating in the context of people who believe that this is just sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. Because if everyone's having the same thing, sleep paralysis, you're not going to see the exact same creature. It's not going to be described exactly the same way. People read different books, different influences, different movies, different stuff. It's not going to be the same. That's weird.
That's where it's kind of like, yeah, you can almost argue both ways, because if something is so similar and is being experienced broadly, if it's something that's in the cultural zeitgeist, you can explain it as that kind of, you know, like everyone, it's in the canon, everyone's familiar. However, you can also argue that a lot of people either A, had no interest in aliens or UFOs or anything, or have very limited knowledge and aren't the type of buffs to go and rent a bunch of UFO videos. But anyways, for this next one, question five, I've got a little bit more of like generalized to the area.
Okay.
Questions. So the Muskokas in Ontario have been notorious for UFO sightings in recent and distant memory. In 2008, there was a record number of sightings. So it's true or false? True or false, there was a total of more than 1,000 sightings in the area, a whopping 25% increase from the year before.
In 2008.
In 2008.
I'm going to... That's a big number. I'm going to say true.
You are correct.
Yes.
And fun fact here, Ontario and British Columbia were the hotspots of that year. And Prince Edward Island only had two mysterious objects flying about. Well, none of it in the Northwest Territories reported none.
That we know of.
It's kind of similar to Corona. Right. Actually, not anymore.
I think, there's a couple.
Anyways. Okay. Number six here. We looked at a few prominent researchers in the field of ufology for this episode, including Wyoming psychologist Dr. Leo Sprinkle, whose interest in the alien abduction phenomena began in the late 1960s. He is a sympathizer to and an eventual believer in the abductee story. Dr. Sprinkle went on to hold annual conferences on the topic, eventually claiming to have his own abduction experiences in childhood. Claims that actually eventually led to his dismissal at the University of Wyoming. So true or false, Dr. Sprinkle is also responsible for first suggesting the possible link between cattle mutilations and abductions.
I'm going to say it feels like it's true, but I feel like my heart is telling me that it was actually someone else. I don't know why. I'm going to say false. I don't know why I was thinking like, I don't know why, for some reason, totally random and completely unrelated in a way, but J. Allen Hynek popped into my head for the whole swamp gas thing. Mm-hmm. But I know there were other names for people who aren't like super adept that would throw out a different name for swamp gas potentially, but it was him.
Okay.
So I thought it was maybe someone else, but okay. Anyway.
Yeah, Sprinkle. I actually didn't know that. I was looking into our notes again. Well, I didn't know, didn't remember. So I have another one on Sprinkle, too. This is an A and B.
Sprinkle it on me.
So, true or false, Dr. Sprinkle is also involved in the Skinwalker Ranch investigations.
That's a good question. Sprinkle Boy. Is he sprinkling the research all over the place here? I'm going to say true.
True.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. Another point for you there. He's racking them up.
All right. Am I?
Kind of.
All right.
I don't know.
I was
not doing that bad.
Okay.
Like, there's a few bonus points you missed. There's a few, bonus points that made up for the regular points, though.
Okay. All right.
All right. Number seven here. Dr. David. Or sorry. He's not a doctor. Got ahead of myself there.
He's sitting there like, yes, I'm a doctor. Oh.
Well, maybe he's a doctor now, and I'm not familiar with it, but David M. Jacobs is another ufologist we touched on during this episode. Jacobs is actually a proponent of the alien hybrid / invasion theory, citing many cases in his research that involved reproductive focuses in the abductions, as well as confirmed pregnancies, only to discover unborn babies to disappear. So this is an A question here, A and B again. Actually, sorry, it's not an A and B, it's just an A.
All right.
It's another true and false, though. Okay, so Jacobs was interviewed on Coast to Coast in 2008 by host George Knapp. The interview details his most recent research to date, revealing that Jacobs is more certain now than ever before that alien integration into human society has already begun. True or false?
I feel that that's true. Like, he definitely would have said that on Coast to Coast. True.
Yes, that is correct. He is a proponent that basically what we've, it's almost like one of the main threads in our favorite show ever.
X-Files?
Yeah, X-Files.
Yeah.
All I could see was Mulder's face in my head. I was like, anyway, it's been a while since we've watched that one.
It has.
But that was a very prominent theme. The idea that pregnancy, so women actually giving birth to alien human hybrids that are then abducted themselves, or just the idea that humans are walking around that are actually like these super alien beings.
I think that was the premise of a couple of the movies too, wasn't it? For the X-Files movies.
Mm-hmm. They just sprinkled it in. Just like Leo Sprinkle.
Oh, Sprinkly Boy.
Little Sprinkly Boy. He's actually quite a fascinating fellow. So let's get on to question number eight.
Okay.
Doo-doo-doo. I feel like we need that, like, the theme song for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
But we're just testing it out here, you guys. You might get some some crazy sound effects moving forward with this trivia show.
We'll sprinkle them in.
God, that's just the pun of the day, eh?
Okay.
All right.
Number eight, psychology of the victims. In a Harvard study of abduction victims by psychologist Dr. McNally and team, there were five distinct similarities in the psychological makeup of abductees. This is a tough one. So there's five. If you can recall any of these, I will give you a point.
So, like, as a result of them, like, believing they were abducted, so say for, like, I'll chuck, like, memory loss for, like, stuff like that? Would that count as one? Would that be one?
No. This is more like psychological similarities, not really resulting from their experience per se, but could have potentially because they were all studied afterwards, obviously.
Gotcha.
However, it's more so like generalized psychological factors. And you actually already mentioned one.
So sleep paralysis?
That's one. Yeah, definitely.
Like paranoia? Paranoid delusion? Schizophrenia?
No, actually. They're a little bit more normal than that.
Okay, like more commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
But at the
depression,
same time.
Depression, stress?
Actually, like, think of that chick from Mars Attacks that's like all like, you know, exactly. Oh, she's sitting on her car.
Like baked? Drug users?
They're not drug users, but they do have a lot of new age or non-mainstream alternative beliefs.
Okay, so I mean, I'm taking a big fat zero for that, but I mean, I'm just chucking out a million.
You got
ideas
one.
Here.
You got sleep paralysis.
Okay, I'll take one.
And I think I forgot to write down. Actually, you got that other one right too.
That's
I need
a tough
to give you a point
though.
For that. Okay, so the five here that I have: one, experiencing sleep paralysis or hallucinations upon awakening. So you got that one. 2, a tendency to recall false memories. Example, like recalling things that have never happened, including words, items, sentences, experiences.
Right. Okay.
3, high levels of absorption. Like this means they're prone to suggestibility. So fantasy prone, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
4th was one I already mentioned. New age / non-mainstream alternative beliefs. And then 5, this is probably the most obvious, familiarity with the cultural narrative of alien abduction.
Oh, I'm an idiot. I should have.
There is a note here, though, and this is a quote from the article as it was kind of, it was reviewed, not reviewed, but it was kind of synopsized in Psychology Today.
Okay.
And it says here, all of these studies of alien abductees, in brackets here, here quotes, were carried out after they had their abduction experiences. So it's difficult to know whether these 5 traits are consequences of the experience or were, as McNally suggests, factors that led individuals to interpret rather earthly experiences such as sleep paralysis or hallucinations as evidence of abduction. End right. quote. So there's kind of like, it's like it's the chicken or the egg.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Makes me want to cover some more UFO stuff.
Mm-hmm. I've got 2 more questions for you.
Okay.
This is a fun one. It's an A, B, C, or D question.
Okay.
So 9, back to Charlotte Brown's story. Charlotte's first encounter took place in the late evening around 10:10 p.m. according to her, and took place over a period of how many hours? So A, 1, B, 3, C, 4, or D, 6?
I am going to go with C.
4 hours?
Yes, 4 hours.
B, 3 hours.
3 hours. Okay.
This pen doesn't work. Okay, there we go. All right, I got 1 more question for y'all.
Okay.
Charlotte's next encounter occurred during the daytime. At age 15, Charlotte described how the being was much shorter than she was, at approximately 4'3" tall. Where did this encounter take place?
So this one, as my memory, if my memory serves me correctly, was I'm picturing outside of a fence outside of school. Like it's right outside of her school, elementary school, during the day.
Yeah. By this time she was like 15. So she was in like middle school. High school. I don't know. Maybe they combine them like we do here.
Right.
Yeah. You're correct though.
Yay.
So you got 1 point there. Basically it was after a half day of school. She was walking home. She recalls sighting the craft about 300 yards away from the original encounter. So kind of curious. It's like, wait a second. Is it traumatic memory kind of coming in? But apparently she described how she was beckoned into the craft yet again,
right,
but has since blanked out all that happened afterward.
Interesting.
Oh, Charlotte.
And yeah, of course, the burr is nowhere to be found, so we can't study that or anything.
I know. That was one of the things, too, when I was going into some of the details for this episode and some of the research and some, because there was definitely, we brought in a lot of like more skeptical approaches and analysis and yeah, a lot of, there was this one website in particular, a research team that was kind of trying to study evidence of abduction. So like objects that people say have been implanted in them.
Yeah.
And they were pretty scathing and they were saying how essentially all of their efforts were met with resistance from the abductees and that they were even met with such logics as, oh, well, the aliens are too smart ever to let the evidence fall into our hands and other such nonsensical things like that. So I remember that was something that I was kind of like, oh, I don't really, I felt like Charlotte was very genuine though in her story. What did you make of that? From what you remember, at least.
Thinking back to the interview, she seemed to be one of the most genuine, not to say that there's a scale of genuine, disingenuine with abductees. Like everyone has their own sort of way of telling what happened to them, but she definitely seemed to be like, she had come to terms with it, like doing that interview, and that it was something that had actually happened to her, a traumatic experience. But that's the thing. It's like, we don't, it always comes back to the idea of, sleep paralysis and these types of things. Like, did it actually happen? But then in that sense too, you could tie that in on a paranormal angle to the idea of UFOs and these types of abduction situations and encounters being not otherworldly, but interdimensional. And in that sense, sleep paralysis might not it's sort of it's on a line between a real world description of what's happening, sleep paralysis on the science side, and like maybe something else, like mm-hmm. you know what I mean,
crossing
like,
over into different realms.
Yeah, while you're asleep.
Yeah, it's interesting because like yeah, she definitely told her story to is it Peter Grousky from CBC Morningside. Much later, so it was in the 80s. It was like 86.
Which I think is why I thought 77 for some reason, because of the interview.
Yeah.
Ah,
and it had that very, like, velvety, fuzzy sort of radio quality to it.
Yeah, I love listening to old stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was 10?
That was it.
How did I do then?
Okay, let's add it up here. Hopefully, okay, I got them all. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So you got 12 out of a possible 16, 17. So 12 out of 17 possible points.
Okay.
It's not bad.
Not too shabby.
It's a passing grade. I think it's a B minus.
I'll take that. I'll take that. Are you ready to get quizzed?
No, I'm not. But this one, I hope, this wasn't too long ago. What are we talking about for this one?
So for the ninth spot in our top 10 episode list here, we are going to be doing some trivia on El Chupacabra. I'm just going to grab the point tally sheet here. Okay.
All right. Well, okay. I'm shooting blind, I guess.
Shooting blind.
Oh, dear. This is going to be interesting.
Okay. So, of course, I mean, you guys all remember El Chupacabra. So one of the most iconic cryptids, really. I mean, Loch Ness, El Chupa, Thunderbirds, like they're all up there. Mothman, Jersey mm-hmm. Devil, like one of the most famous, well-known. People who aren't into cryptozoology will know of El Chupacabra.
Yes, the goat-sucking nightmare.
There you go. So you actually, so this scale of questions here, 1 to 10, goes from easy to hard, I think. I mean, there's a few sort of like jumping around in between, but you've actually already sort of gotten part of a point on this first question here.
Sweet.
Starting off easy. So for everyone listening out there, this is a two-part question here, so with a bonus, I guess. What does El Chupacabra translate to directly, and name three other animals it seems to enjoy killing?
Well, the direct translation?
El Chupacabra.
Is it literally the goat sucker?
It is.
Okay, that's what I thought. But it's not only goats. There seems to be, I would say dogs is a safe bet.
Yep, that was one.
Dogs. Pigs?
Yeah.
Sheep? Or llamas?
Technically, neither of those were listed. I'll give you one more
cows?
Try.
Cows?
Cows.
Okay.
All right. I'll give you 2 points for that first one. Easy peasy. We're easing into
2 points. I'll take it.
Okay. Question number two. The El Chupacabra phenomena seems very modern, but could in fact go back much further. When did the El Chupacabra phenomena really take off? Which decade did it take off?
I think I'm pretty sure it was the 90s. Because there was some movie that came out too, wasn't there?
Ding, ding, ding.
It's like 95 or 96?
The 1990s.
Boom.
Correct.
Sweet.
For a follow-up bonus point, there was an alternate date as a possible first Chupacabra encounter. So when was the first possible El Chupacabra attack recorded? Was it A, 1971, B, 1993, C, 1540, or D, 1955?
I'm going to think D.
It was C, 1540.
What?
Where there was, I don't actually have the name pulled up here, one of the early Spanish conquistadors claimed to have some of his
crazy
livestock for his soldiers attacked by an unknown creature.
Cortez or
yeah, something like that.
Alero
around 1540.
So
we got one possible point there
and one X.
Okay, you ready for number three?
Yes,
kind of, sort of.
Sure, I'll take it.
Okay, question number three. We all know that El Chupacabra is an oddly shaped creature resembling several different animals all at once. What two living things were most prominently used to describe the physical abilities of El Chupacabra?
I'm going to say one is like the proboscis thing, like the sucking appendage. That's
ding.
Like kind of like a fly or like a mosquito.
You got one.
I'm going to say maybe kangaroo.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, the feet.
You got it.
Uh-huh.
Kangaroo, because it had these very powerful legs for jumping ability. And a lot of the stories were basically it leaping from the ground directly onto roofs, you know, in upwards of 10 feet plus jump.
Now that I think about it, that really makes sense. Because it's like, if you think, don't think mammal, don't think kangaroo, think grasshopper.
Yeah.
Right? Instead. Yeah. And then it makes more sense.
It's I guess it's because the reason they said kangaroo is because it seemed to be bipedal. Whereas a grasshopper is kind of like on all fours jumping like laterally.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this was like seemed to be a bipedal animal, which is, again, going back to the original episode, you guys should listen if you haven't. The idea of mangy coyotes and stuff being proposed doesn't necessarily add up to people claiming to see things walking around on two legs.
And
because
hopping.
That's exactly not a thing. Unless there's some sort of mutated kangaroo in Puerto Rico.
Maybe it was an owl.
Could have been an owl. Shout out to Joe. Okay. Question number four. Before El Chupacabra was spotted in Puerto Rico, the creature was reported long before in a remote area of which country?
Oh. The U.S.? No? Okay.
There was a bonus point for that too.
Yeah.
Do you want to just try one more time? I'll give you a hint. It's a South American country.
Chile?
You got it.
Oh.
Chile. And specifically the Chilean highlands.
Right. So, okay. That sounds vaguely familiar.
I might give you like a half a point there.
It's kind of coming back, yeah.
So basically, but
a point five.
The struggle, you get a point five. The struggle, though, with that, of course, was the idea that the Chilean highlands is one of the most similar terrains on Earth to Mars, and there's not a lot of things to eat and live off of out there. But, of course, this creature is, we don't know exactly what it's feeding off of, per se, other than the violent attacks.
Well, exactly, the blood-sucking aspect. But
right.
It makes sense. Like, Chilean highlands, like, if it's from out of this world, land on a mountaintop, you know?
That's kind of like Mars.
Yep.
Okay, that was number, that was number four.
Okay.
Okay, we're halfway through here, and you're actually doing really well.
Not struggling too hard yet.
So we're getting into some of the nitty-gritty here. So, attacks. All right. Attacks from El Chupacabra are very, very strange. And when investigated, it was discovered that the creature seems to target specific areas. Where exactly does El Chupacabra typically attack on the body? Think back to one of your earlier answers.
Yeah, the physical ability. I feel like it's the neck, but I feel like... The back of the neck?
Ding, yeah.
Yeah?
Ding.
The front of the neck?
The back of the neck.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
I feel like there was that one attack, too. I'm trying to, like, some woman was clawed or something.
Yeah, she was scraped up on her arms and stuff. It was a young girl, I believe it was.
Oh, okay.
That was in the 70s, I think.
In the 70s? I thought this was a 90s thing.
talked about accounts from earlier, over the place.
Hey? Yeah.
But I will give you that. It was on the back of the neck because it seemed to be using this, the proboscis-like blood-sucking tube to get right in there.
Nice little blood straw.
Okay. This one's a little harder. I'd like to think that it is anyway. Number six. What unusual aspect was discovered about the bodies of El Chupacabra victims?
Unusual aspects. Well, they were bloodless.
I'll give you a half point, but that's not what I was looking for. There was one really specific, obviously the thing's a blood sucker. So we know that. But there was a really specific, strange aspect.
About the goo, like the saliva on them? No? What is it?
They did not go into rigor mortis.
If
you recall.
That makes sense. Come on. Give me a quarter point, at least.
I'll give you a half point there.
Rigor mortis. Oh, what am I, a coroner?
Is that actually true? Can you, you can't get any of that without, we don't know if they were entirely drained of blood. I mean, that's just how the moniker goes, right? Like, nobody actually, looked to see if there was zero red blood cells left in any of these animals. That didn't happen.
Just any blood at all.
It was clearly just...
plasma, any of that, right?
Right.
Red blood cells are just a part of blood. Would just need to be drained of blood.
Mm-hmm. But you'd have to be drained of all your blood.
You would. And for me, when I heard that, too, it's almost like the classic, urban legend where it's
right.
You never know how accurate that really is. Was there... we don't have coroner reports, right, from all of these attacks. facts.
Very true.
That would be nice. If anyone has those, just send them our way.
We only had a few. Like, we had the ones from specifically just from veterinarians.
Yes,
from
yeah.
Some
there
of
was,
the earlier attacks, mm-hmm. but
it was from cats.
Yeah, mm-hmm. cats. Number 7. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
What other paranormal phenomena has been linked or associated with El Chupacabra? Bonus point if you can state the event itself. What other paranormal phenomena has been linked or associated with El Chupacabra?
I feel like it's UFOs.
Ding.
Yeah.
So that's part of it.
And so
bonus
was...
point for the event itself associated with El Chupa. That was really specific.
And this was like in Mexico or?
In Puerto Rico.
In Puerto Rico.
That's a big hint, by the way.
The Anyone Puerto Rican listening? Day Parade?
We just want to get home and unwind.
I don't know.
Don't know?
Yeah.
So correct on the UFOs. So ding, ding, ding. Yep. And then the bonus point was the 1975 MOCA attacks in Puerto Rico, where there was vampire-like attacks on livestock, very similar to El Chupa attacks,
okay.
in direct association with UFO sightings over the city.
Hmm.
Yeah.
MOCA.
Yeah.
Okay.
MOCA vampire attacks.
Interesting. All right.
Okay.
Forgot that one.
You got 1 point there.
I'm still I'll passing though, right?
Oh, God. Yeah. You're murdering me right now. This one's funny. I think this was my favorite one to come up with.
All right.
I think you'll probably nail it, but we'll see. Okay, everyone listening, this is a fun one. So, number 8. The bodies of all kinds of animals have been misidentified in the search of El Chupacabra. Which of the following is not one of those misidentified animals?
Mm.
A, a coyote. B, an alligator. C, a raccoon. D, a fish. Or E, a dog.
I'm going to say the raccoon. Really?
All of these animals have been identified as potentially chupacabra bodies except for alligator. Literally, there's been a large fish body that was brought in and analyzed as a potentially a chupacabra body, a mutilated chupacabra body.
Yeah, alligator is the most obvious, but I was kind of thinking, I was like, well, but if you had like a weirdly decomposed.
I know, right? That's why I thought it would throw you off. I thought the alligator was what was going to... Or the fish was going to throw
the
you
fish.
Off.
Fish. Well, I was thinking, right? Like, there's a lot of weird fish out there.
I know, but it's not a, you know, a limbed creature.
True.
That lives on land.
Yeah, that's right? Like, bizarre.
Yeah, and that was literally one of the ones that was brought forward.
I want to see what that fish looked like.
I know,
like.
Right? Okay, so alligator was the answer for that. D, alligator.
Got
All
it.
Right. Okay, number 9. So there are many crazy theories on El Chupacabra, which makes it hard to tell what's what. So which of the following is not one of those theories? So I'm going to list some.
Okay.
Is it A, El Chupacabra is some kind of ancient gargoyle? B, El Chupacabra is actually a pack of wild dogs, which is to blame for the attacks?
Mm-hmm.
C, El Chupacabra is some kind of mutated subterranean lizard? D, El Chupacabra is actually a human cult perpetrating the attacks? Or E, El Chupacabra is a mutated vampire bat?
Oh.
You want me to read them again?
I feel like it's maybe the cult. That's not one of them? No? Oh, I guess that's pretty...
So all of these have been proposed as possible explanations for El Chupacabra. The one that I hadn't seen is El Chupacabra is some kind of mutated subterranean lizard creature.
Okay.
So it doesn't appear to be one of the Hollow Earth lizards.
I feel like someone somewhere out there in the world has probably said that.
Probably. But it didn't come up in our research and it wasn't in our notes. So I'm counting that as not a theory. UFOs is definitely a theory. Gargoyles came up. We talked about gargoyles as a theory. Pack of wild dogs was one of the main ones that police said when they were investigating the attacks. And the vampire bat was proposed by pretty much everyone. They don't kill their victims. They lick a very small amount of blood. Most of the time, the horses and cows that experience it don't even know that they're there.
No.
So probably
great
not
way
the
to
case.
Hand around some diseases, though.
Indeed it is.
Mm-hmm.
This time, especially right now.
Well,
eh?
That was really fun.
I got one more.
You got one more?
Number 10. That was number 9.
We got
one
nine?
More.
Uh-huh. Okay. One more chance for me to redeem myself.
Okay. This one's fun. Kind of different, too. So this is a paragraph. You got to kind of pick out what's wrong.
Mm,
so
what? Okay.
Pick out what is incorrect about this El Chupacabra description.
Mm.
El Chupacabra is an unidentified creature standing bipedally 2 to 6 feet tall with large spines down its back, gray in color with small beady red eyes. El Chupacabra is said to suck its victim's blood through its lipless mouth using an insect-like proboscis, completely draining its victims of blood. Although none have been captured, witnesses suggest that it resembles a gray alien-like creature.
Okay.
You want me to read that one more time?
Well,
there's one glaringly incorrect aspect of this description.
The lipless mouth. Like, it's not a mouth, though. That's incorrect, in my opinion.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. It's not the correct answer, but it's actually a good point.
I feel like the size is off, too. 2 to 6 feet? Two?
Yeah, it's
2 feet?
That's the range. So right. That is correct.
That's correct. The color.
Give it one more try. Is,
what were the spikes again? Would you describe those as?
Let me read this one more time, yeah. And then you can just guess. El Chupacabra is an unidentified creature standing bipedally 2 to 6 feet tall, with large spines down its back. It's gray in color with small, beady red eyes. El Chupacabra is said to suck its victim's blood.
I thought they were big red eyes. Is that kind of the glaringly obvious one?
I'm not giving you that, but that is the answer. It's correct. And
what?
Yeah.
Well, you've read that so fast. I'm like,
well, it only took you 12 tries.
12 tries?
Okay, I'll give you a half point.
Okay.
If you're very lucky to get a half point.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. Well, I feel like I was pretty generous.
Well, we started this question, I think, on the 15th. It's now June. So.
Alrighty there, buddy boy.
I'm giving you a 0.5. So, out of a possible 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, Amber, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9.5 out of 13.
Not bad.
You crushed me.
Not bad. What'd you get again? You got like 12 out of 17?
I got 12 out of 17.
That's not bad.
Now, obviously, these aren't like exactly the same scoring levels here. So we haven't really dialed in this trivia exactly how it's going to be per se.
It reminds me of Beach Day episode of The Office where it's like, well, you gave me a thumbs up. You gave me a smile. I don't know how do you translate these?
This was honestly, I just wanted to sort of test the waters to see where we stood with remembering stuff. And I think we did slightly better than expected.
I'm impressed.
Honestly.
We even kind of sat down and immediately were like, wait a second, should we have done some review?
Yeah, we looked at each other, we're like,
I think it's better going in blind, though.
I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Yeah, so.
We hope you guys, you know, followed along and we're curious to see how you did. You probably crushed both of us, to be honest.
Exactly.
And so send in, I mean, even if you just, you don't have to take a picture or whatever. We're just curious if you followed along. I mean, send us a message or, you know, shoot us a picture, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And this is something we're going to keep doing, like we said. So we're going to work our way up to number one.
Exactly. So we'll do 2 episodes per release.
Yeah.
And this is all kind of like something we dreamed up in sort of like conjunction to our May Patreon anniversary. We actually also have some really fun, like new weird goodies coming down the way.
We do, yeah.
And some other fun stuff. So we're going to do part of these on our regular feed. We're going to do some of them on our Patreon feed for everyone. And so you can go and you can check out our awesome little community and all the fun perks and everything there.
Totally.
But until then, I guess. Hey, Andrew, anything else you want to throw in before we wrap it up?
I think that's it. Honestly, I just can't wait to see how much more people know than us. Mm-hmm. So until next time, on Into the Portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.